We're fortunate enough to have John Mundy here tonight, and he is a person who has had an experience most of us probably haven't had. He got to meet Helen Schuckman back in 1973. She was a scribe of A Course in Miracles, and she worked and served as his counselor until his death in 1980. He's also, as you know, a very prolific writer. His two most current books are Eternal Life and A Course in Miracles, and his previous book in 2012 was Living A Course in Miracles, which is now in several languages and has become a bestseller. So he's always been a compassionate spokesperson for the Course, through his talks and his writings, and he is a person that I can say has lived what the Course teaches. So here's John Mundy.
Thank you, Diana. It's wonderful. I don't know whether some of you know, I've been at Fellowship of the Day a few times in the past, but it's been years since I was here last. It's nice seeing some old friends like Jim Noble here and others, and April back there in the back. And I remember one of my memories. You know, we remember the pains, right? It wasn't a pain, but I remember I was speaking for Fellowship. That was in July, if I'm on a guess, 2002, something like that. And it was in a Unitarian church, and it was 100 degrees outside. And there was no air conditioning in the church. And I was surprised that anybody showed up. But we did. We just sweat our way through it. It was amazing. So thank you. It's nice being back with you again and seeing a number of friends here. And I want to thank Dan and Carol Maynard, Dan in particular, for kind of help coordinating all of my being all over Lansing today and driving me around and driving me back from upstate to be with you today. I do have some books back there. I'll be happy to stand at the table and tell you about the books afterwards. I publish a magazine called Miracles. I've been doing so for the past 30 years. We're running a little bit low, but if you'd like to take a copy, why, there's some copies back there. They're a little advertisement. They're $40 a year. We just raised the price. But I say whenever I give a talk, it's $20 if you start it today. Okay, but you have to. In other words, I leave with a subscription, right? And there's also a notepad back there if you'd like to leave me your information. So that I promise not to bother you with a lot of emails, but if you want to share that information so we can be in contact. The primary reason for that is if I'm back in the area, you'd get a notice. And I don't send out emails for like one of the. I ask you that you leave your whole information because we file everything by zip code. So if I'm going to Virginia, you don't need to know about it. That's why we break it down that way. So thank you, and it's wonderful being with you. So our topic for this evening is I'm Nobody, Who Are You? And this is on a very special theme in A Course in Miracles, which is called specialness. And we're looking at the dangers and the pitfalls of specialness and how it distracts us and how it keeps us from being aware of our true nature and our real reality as a part of the mind of God. And I want to read just two quotes from the Course in Miracles to start. One says, "Prepare you now for the undoing of what never was." It was all a fantasy. It's all a dream, and we're just letting go of something that actually never had any reality at all. That's why the topic is, I'm Nobody, Who Are You? And then a line from the Course which says, "You are not special, and if you think that you are, and you would defend your specialness against the truth of who you really are, how could you know the truth?" You may have heard this story about a minister of a very large church who goes into the chapel and kneels down and begins to pray. And he says, "Lord, I'm nobody. I am so nobody." The assistant minister is walking past, sees the senior minister down there on his knees, goes in, kneels down next to the senior minister and says, "Lord, I too am nobody. I am so nobody." The custodian's walking by, sees the two ministers in there, goes in, kneels down next to the associate and says, "Lord, I too am nobody. I'm so nobody. The assistant minister opens his eyes, sees the custodian next to him, hears what he says, taps the senior minister in the side and says, "Look who thinks he's nobody." So I want to talk about four different ways. There's more than four, but just four kind of obvious ways in which we may think that we're special, that we are different. According to the Course in Miracles, we're all absolutely equal. But one of the things that the ego does, it likes to think of itself as being special. So the first way I'm going to suggest is the most obvious way of all, the way that even the man on the street would understand, and that is that we're special because we're hot. We drive a really fancy car. We make a lot of money. We've got some very important kind of a job that we do. We're special in that sense, right? Actually, one of the things that I think that we really wouldn't want to be, what you really wouldn't want to be, is famous. I'm sure that some of you know the works of Dr. David Hawkins. At one point, he says, routinely, people discover that life is a celebration is an onerous... let me start this over again. Routinely, people discover that life as a celebrity is onerous and burdensome to them once the novelty of the thing has worn off. Because then it becomes really difficult to keep that ball in the air, to keep it up there, you know, because I mean, the tabloids are after you, the paparazzi's after you. Famous people have very difficult lives. Marilyn Monroe's, the Elvis Presley's, the Princess Diana's, the Anna Nicole Smith's, the Robin Williams, right? With this very, very difficult because the whole world is reinforcing the idea that you are somebody. I mean, it's bad enough that you have to do it yourself, but now the world is also affirming that you are somebody special, right? Marilyn Monroe. I love Marilyn Monroe because she was at heart really just a lovely, sincere kind of person who got trapped in specialness. There's a series that you can watch on YouTube. It's called The Last Interview with Marilyn, I think something like that. She was interviewed with, I think it was Life magazine. This was just days before she died. And one of the things that she said in the interview is that she said, "I'm not special." She says, "I'm not a sex goddess." She says, a sex goddess is a thing. She says, "I'm not a thing. I'm just a person. I'm just Norma Jean." And she was crying when she talks about it. Why can't she says, "Hollywood made this up, you know, and I went along with it." And the whole world went along with it. Marilyn Monroe is said to have reached mythological proportions. So that's interesting. You reach what if you reach mythological proportions, then you're a myth. There's no truth in it at all. This whole thing got made up, and she's crying. She says, "I'm just Norma Jean." You know? But Norma Jean got lost in a mythology of something we call Marilyn Monroe, and the whole world bought that mythology, so there was no escape. There was no getting away from it except to leave here completely, right? That's true for an awful lot. I had gone to Houston to give a talk, and I sometimes don't know who I'm going to stay with when I go to a different city, but the church had made arrangements for me to stay with this particular lady, and normal thing to do is to go out to dinner before going back to stay at her home for the evening. And we're sitting in a restaurant, and you know how up over the bar there are televisions, and she looks up and she says, "Oh, there's my son on TV." And I didn't know who her son was. And it turned out he was the MVP in baseball. And I'm not a baseball person, so I didn't even know who it was. And she said, "He is the unhappiest man." I mean, he's the MVP in baseball and he's the unhappiest man? She said, "Well, he's the MVP last year. This year he's on a losing team. They're not even going to get into the playoffs." What if your happiness depended upon whether or not you got into the playoffs, right? By the way, she said, you're going to be staying in one of his seven houses tonight. He was 6'8", I'm 5'8". And the beds, everything was made special for him, so I walk into the sink, it comes up to here on me, right? But that's a certain kind of specialness. Now, a second kind of specialness that we might think of is just the opposite from that kind of elevated thinking that we're special, to the, just the opposite of that, and that's that you're special because you're not hot. Woe is me. Look at all my difficulties. Look how life is dumped on me. I'm special because I'm victim. There's a very important line in the Course in Miracles, of course, is I am not a victim of the world I see. Right? It's very important that we don't reinforce. I like the way that Lily Tomlin once said, man invented language to satisfy his deep need to complain. Well, think about it. You know, notice how often over coffee or tea or just sitting down with a friend, the conversation will turn to some sort of problem, something that we want to complain about that's going out there in the world. You know, Hank Williams, the original Hank Williams, not Hank Williams Jr., but Hank Williams Sr., was once being interviewed by a DJ in a radio station, and he said, Hank, you've had a number of number one hits. Why do you think that's true? And he says, well, everybody feels good about feeling bad. Now, see, you're laughing because it's true, right? We kind of like to get in there and wallow around in our badness, right? Actually, on that trip that I'd made to Texas, when I went to pick up my rental car, and I got in and I started driving to the place that I was going to go, I turned the radio on. I didn't have any CDs with me to listen to, and it was on a country western station. And I thought, what the heck? I'm in Texas. So let me be in Texas, and I will listen to some country western music. And I noticed, actually, that this was one, with the exception of one really good song. And by the way, I love these songs. I was thinking about Helen, and Helen, how Helen would respond to hearing these words put to music like that. It's incredible. In any event, so I turned on the radio, and I'm listening to country western songs. And with one exception, there was one that was really good. There was one very upbeat and very positive. But all of the rest of them were somebody done me wrong kind of a song, right? So here are some actual lines from country western songs, right? My wife ran off with my best friend, and I sure do miss him. I'm so miserable without you, it's almost like you were here. I liked you better before I got to know you so well. How can I miss you if you won't go away? I keep forgetting I forgot about you. And if you don't leave me alone, I'll go find somebody who will. So that's just a second way that we know we like to get in there and wallow around and be victims. And the whole responsibility thing, I love the fact that the responsibility got put to music like that. I probably quote that at almost every workshop that I give. And that's what the Course is. I am responsible for what I say. I choose the feelings I experience. I decide upon the goal of which. And the question is, do you believe that last line of that thing? And I receive as I have asked. The Course is all about being responsible, right? Because then you can't bitch. And you can't complain. And you can't say they did this and they did that and how I got dumped, all right? So a third way that we could think of ourselves as being special is that we're a little superior or above others because of our opinions, because of the higher way in which we see things. I like the way that Françoise-Renée de Chateaubriand, who is a founder of Romanticism in French literature, says, you are not special just because you can see the world in an odious light, right? And also, Christopher Lichtenberg, who was a German scientist, says, nothing is more conducive to peace of mind than not having an opinion. Isn't that great? Nothing's more conducive to peace than not having an opinion. By the way, do you know what the difference is between a crow and a raven? The difference, as you see, crows have got these four long feathers that comes off the tips of their wings, and those feathers are called pinions. And ravens, rather than having four, have five of those. So it's just a matter of opinion.
Oh.
Sorry about that. And there's a wonderful Buddhist saying, which is, do not seek enlightenment. I love this Buddhist quote. Do not seek enlightenment. Simply cease to cherish opinions. Isn't that great? Simply cease to cherish opinions. I said at the workshop this afternoon, the basic difference between a mystic and an ordinary person is the ordinary individual, which include almost all of us almost all the time, is that we're projectors. That is, that we're making up the world, that we're interpreting the world, which means that we can't see anything because we're always projecting the world we see. And a mystic is really somebody who's just a receptor rather than being projector. So they just see, and they just see without condemnation, without analysis, without interpretation. They just let the world be what it is, right? Without trying to fix the thing. My wife said, my wife's not a Course in Miracles student, but she's had to listen to me a number of times. And she said that's the part of the Course that she really understood the best. Just leave it alone. It's so much better to leave it alone. Don't try to fix. Other people don't need to be fixed. Kids don't need to be fixed. They need to be loved. Mates don't need to be fixed. They need to be loved. So just giving up on the fixing and stuff. So a fourth way that we might think of ourselves as being special is that we're special because, and you especially got to watch out for this one, if you're the kind of person that goes to church. And that is that you're special because you're spiritual. You are a good person. You meditate. You pray. You read the Course in Miracles. You read other spiritual literature. You eat a clean diet, so you're better than those people who don't. Or most insidious of all, you're not judgmental, so you're better than those judgmental people. There's a wonderful story about four Zen students who decide to go into a week of silent meditation together, and they sit down. And a couple of hours go by, and one of them says, I wonder if I remembered to turn off the stove. To which the second one says, you idiot, you have spoken. We had agreed not to speak. To which the third one says, and now what are you thinking about? You two have spoken. To which the fourth one says, I'm the only one who's not spoken. It's insidious, this ego thing, right? Even in the most spiritual of contexts, right? And you may have heard the story about the four ladies who are playing cards in a retirement home in Florida. And one of them says, my son is a priest. They're all Catholic ladies. And whenever he walks into a room, all the ladies say, good evening, Father. Second one takes a sip of tea and says, well, my son is a bishop. And when he walks into the room, all the people say, good evening, Your Eminence. No, Eminence is for cardinals. And, well, the third one says that her son is a cardinal. He says, when he walks into the room, all the ladies say, good evening, Your Eminence. And then the fourth one says, well, my son is a 6'2" hard-bodied male stripper. And whenever he walks into the room, all the ladies say, oh, my God. Again, David Hawkins says there's nothing deadlier than a religionized ego. Right? And I have to say, having spent about 40, 50 years in the church, it's interesting, I'm in a Methodist church. I was a Methodist minister for 28 years until they asked me to leave because I was teaching this thing called A Course in Miracles. It was working out pretty good for a very long time, but the bishop didn't like that I was doing it. And I finally, a couple people showed up that were new and they didn't like it either, so that was the end of it, right? But I'm back temporarily. It's interesting being back. So we're none of these things. We're not special. We're not victims. Our opinions don't count. We're not any of that stuff. So the real question is, who are you if none of this stuff is true? I didn't say, but I could have said to the afternoon group, we were talking about heaven. There are no doctors in heaven. There are no reverends in heaven. There are no captains. There are no lieutenants. There's none. That's all stuff that we make up. We make up all this stuff. All these are ways of division and dividing. But there's no division. There couldn't possibly be, not if we're all the same in the eyes of God. So I really like Emily Dickinson. Some of you know Emily Dickinson's I'm Nobody. I'm going to share it with you. And if you know it, if you can say it with me, just sort of mouth it along with me, and we'll do it together, okay? It goes like this. I'm nobody. Who are you? Are you nobody too? Then there's a pair of us. Don't tell. They'd banish us, you know. How boring to be somebody. How public like a frog to say your name the whole day long to some admiring bog. That's Emily Dickinson. I like the way the St. John of the Cross says, let me remember that myself, this is a little self, is nothing, but that myself is all. Capital S self. And Henry Blake asked Henry David Thoreau if he didn't get lonely out there by himself all the time at Walden Pond. And he said, no, I'm nobody. Right? I shared at the service this morning a quote from Ralph Waldo Emerson that I would like to share with you too. It's a perfect description of a mystical experience in just a very few words. It goes like this. Standing on the bare ground, my head bathed in the blithe air, and uplifted into infinite space, all mean egotism vanishes. I become a transparent eyeball. I am nothing. I see all. The currents of universal being circulate through me. I am part and parcel of God. How did he get to have this incredible experience of seeing that he was part and parcel of God? First, there is I am nothing. That happens so often in the mystic's experience. I am nothing, but I see all. Because I'm nothing, because I'm not projecting, because I'm not making up the world, and I'm not complaining, I'm not antagonistic against what I see. You literally, in order to have a mystical experience, what has to happen, there's something that has to happen first, and the thing that has to happen first is first you got to stop thinking. You got to stop thinking. We're always thinking, right? One of my favorite mystics is a fellow named Angelus Silesius, who lived during the 16th century. He was a physician, priest, mystic. This quote that I'm about to share with you is so good that I think it ought to be on the wall in a church somewhere. It's that good. It goes like this. God, whose love is everywhere, can't come to visit unless you're not there. Isn't that good? I repeat it. God, whose love is everywhere, can't come to visit unless you're not there. We are so there. We are so into our heads and we are so into thinking that we are putting out such static that we can't. The line in the Course in Miracles says, peace comes to the quiet mind, right? But first we got to quiet the mind before we can hear. Before we can be receptive, right? And any of you know, we have a guest here. Dear. Any of you have heard of Wee Woo Wee? Wee Woo Wee is a very interesting story. Read his books, they're really fantastic. Wee Woo Wee, his real name was Terence Gray, and he was an English nobleman who owned a mansion. In England, he owned racehorses, including a champion racehorse in, back in the 50s somewhere. And he was also one of the owners of the London Ballet Theater. So he was a man of some stature. But he realized after a while that all of this meant nothing to him. And he left and he went to India for a while and he studied with Ramana Maharshi, etc. But he became a Taoist. And then he came back and he started writing under this pseudonym, which was Wee Woo Wee. Wee Woo Wee means non-meddlesome action, right? And probably the quote that he's best known for is for saying, "Why are you unhappy? Because 99.9% of everything you think and everything you do and everything you say is about yourself, and there isn't one." I'll repeat that. You know, why are you unhappy? Because 99% of everything you think and everything you do and everything you say is about yourself, and there isn't one. It doesn't even exist. It doesn't exist in the sense in which we make it up in the world. That's why the Course starts off with, you know, prepare you now for the undoing of what never was, right? And there's another mystic that I like to reference a lot. His name was Gene Klein. Anybody hear of Gene Klein? Well, anyhow, Gene Klein was a Frenchman who he was a doctor who had, was really responsible for helping a number of Jewish folks get out of Germany and through Austria, etc. And he was well known for the for his heroism in that. But anyhow, he was one, he became a well-known speaker. And at one point, there was a fellow at one of his lectures who said, "You seem to be so peaceful and calm and serene, but me, I have all kinds of problems and difficulties. He says, what's the difference between us?" And Gene said, "Well, you think that you are somebody, and I know that I'm not." What a kind of peace there is that comes in not being anybody special. And then some of you remember the Don Juan Carlos Castaneda series? Oh, good. I find the more I mention that anymore, they were very important for me back in the 80s and the 90s, but the crowd is getting younger, or I'm getting older, one of the two. And I throw the name out, and they go, "Huh?" Well, there's a place in the Don Juan Carlos Castaneda series where Don Juan says, "I know all kinds of things because, one, I don't have a personal history." And Carlos got thinking about that was true. He didn't know anything about his past. He didn't have a story. He says, if you don't have a story, you don't have to fit it. And there's a certain kind of freedom in not having a story, because then you don't have to fit it. That's what I mean, that's what's so awful about being famous, is then you get the story is known by the whole world. And then you got to fit it. And if you don't fit it, then you're in misery yourself, right? So number one, he says, I don't have a personal history. He says, I don't feel any more important than anything else. And my death is standing right here over my right shoulder. He says, you get too cocky, turn and look at your death. And your death will say, I haven't touched you yet. Just a couple more quotes. I love sharing quotes. This is from A.H. Almas. Any of you know A.H. Almas? He's a contemporary mystic. He says, I learn a great deal of what I truly am when I'm not trapped in the particulars of personal history and life. I am then the unchanging background witnessing. That's part of what we want to get to. Just be able to witness, just to be there and to see, but without having the story to plug into. Right? And Gangaji, who's another contemporary mystic, says, I am not bound by the story of me. That's why it's so helpful not to have a story. I think our time is about up. Thank you for letting me share some of these ideas with you. And I hope I can share some hugs and maybe sign a book or two with you while I go. Thank you.